start. As a tape ministry person, I will just let you know. This is Linda Allen, and our session is on women and creativity, breaking the silence. Why don't we, let's close in just a little more, get our chairs organized so we are a circle, and we'll just expand the circle as other people come. Well, my name is Linda Allen, and I'm a songwriter and mother, and a mother and a songwriter, and depending on where I am in my life, one or the other of those takes dominance, which is sort of the subject of this workshop. So often we feel that that split between our relationships and our artistic passions. I want to start out first defining the term just a little bit. We're going to talk about creativity. If you ask a group of women, you know, are you creative, you will get 8 out of 10 of them who may say, oh no, I'm really not creative. Because in our culture, in our time, we tend to confuse artistic talent with creativity, or we confuse the product with the process, and we forget what creativity really is about. And I think what creativity is about, I've just got Bill's wonderful book, which I'll be reading from, but it's really helped me define a lot of thoughts I've had for a while. It's called Singing at the Top of Our Lungs, Women, Love, and Creativity, Claudia Bethko and Joanne Creston. We'll be talking a little bit more about it. But I liked how they talk about creativity. Here's a way I want to ask the question. What aspects of your life do you love? This is what I'm talking about when I think about creativity. This is straight from Rimmel. What activity or situation makes you feel most alive, most engaged, most involved? In what ways do you feel you most express who you are? And when we talk about creative passion, that's more of what we're talking about. So by way of introducing ourselves, we're going to go around a circle, and I'd like each of you to speak to that somewhere. What is your creative passion? It may be something you do. Maybe it's something you would like to do in the future. Maybe it's something that you would like to have done, but put aside because of relationship, children, whatever. So I'll just start with myself. I'll tell you who I am. My creative passion is very much split, and too often split rather than integrated, and we'll talk about that later. But too often it's the split, because my passions are my family, my children, my husband, the relationships, the friendships that I have around me in my community. And my other passion is songwriting, performing. That part of me where I feel the most alive, the most centered, often is when I'm on stage or when I'm in the midst of writing a song. And so I recognize that and honor that as one of my creative passions, and recognize that if I ignore either one of those, I'm in deep trouble. You know, I have to continue to honor both. But too often I have seen those different aspects of me as banging into each other. And the real challenge of my life in the past really 16 years since becoming a mom has been to find ways to integrate or honor the fact that they very much feed each other, and I could not have either without the other in my own life. So that's my creative passions. Linda Allen from Bellingham.
Janet Anderson from Tempe, Arizona. This seems really disconnected, but I know when I feel most alive, and that's two different times. Now when I'm working with children, but especially my grandchildren, even if it's just going to the park with them, because some of them are still only 3 years old, the oldest is 9. But when I was having my own children, I felt, especially when they were preschool, I just felt as if my brain were atrophying, as if I were withering and dying. And my real passion has always been international relations. And I would pounce on my news magazines, and when I was a new mother, and I could put off my children until I got them read. And when I was 30 years old, on my birthday, it was very traumatic because at that time, you couldn't even take the Foreign Service exam after 30. And so I thought, my life is gone. It's kind of over. And so I just immersed myself in lots of different volunteer activities for years. Then eventually my life turned and turned, and I was single, and all but one of my children were out of high school. And so I went back into teaching, and I signed up for overseas teaching. So that was rewarding to me. Now, because of differences in discrimination laws, I have passed the Foreign Service exam, and believe it or not, at my age, I'm still being considered for a job with the State Department. But right now, I don't think I'd want to move to a climate that was really, really cold or too far from my grandchildren for very long, so my values have shifted there. But it helps me to just know that I achieved one of the goals of my life, and I had some other ones that I achieved as well. So I feel, and now I have a kind of vicarious intermingling with people from other cultures by teaching ESL to adults. So I feel my life is pretty much in harmony now.
What a good story. Okay, do you mind telling me, what is your age?
64.
I have to tell you, my mother at age 70 has just gone back to college to get her degree and just got the braces off her teeth.
Her
goal, she's finally beginning to achieve. I'm just so moved by those stories.
It begins.
That's neat to hear. I think that a lot of what I think of as creative inside me hasn't been tapped fully yet. Seems like so far in my life, everything that's been shown to me as of value or valued in the society around me is not that creative part. It's the other things. And so I've learned very clearly to shut those parts off and focus on the other things. But I have always been very much reinforced for my writing. And I wrote poetry kind of as an escape growing up, as a way to get away from whatever problems were. And so in some ways, nature and that kind of connection, and in some ways a boundary shutting out the rest of the world, and writing has been very much a creative energy for me. And also, I think letting myself act like I'm 5 years old again. And like you said, going to a park and playing with children, but for me, it's allowing myself to do the things that the children in the park would do, and not watching them do it, but doing it. And standing in the rain last night, or walking through the puddles, or playing hopscotch in Chicago with kids across the street, and it's weird to think of that as creative, really, because I'm not creating anything, but there's definitely something in me that it taps.
Did you say your name?
No, I didn't. I'm Linda Scher from Chicago.
My name is Janet Marquardt. I live in Seattle. And creatively, I am a mother of 3 children, one who's just married, one who's in the process of leaving home, will be a senior in college, and a boy who's 13. And all of our children were long awaited and very much wanted children by adoption and for biological birth. So I have a real need to be, not a need, I have a real fulfillment with my children and my husband and my home. I am a teacher, and that's my creative passion and outlet with little children now, but have done teaching with high school students too. I am a gardener and a Midwest gardener. I know where you grow tomatoes and cucumbers. But my daughter married, and I couldn't afford the flowers for her wedding, so I have become a flower gardener, and it's like, oh, it's just a wonderful creative. And I now know how to do floral bouquets. So that's been really exciting. I love to entertain and put together parties and people. But the creative thing that's always lurking in the background is I was a drama major at St. Olaf College, and I don't sing or dance very well. So I've always said that when I go to heaven, God's going to give me a voice and an ability to dance. But the drama part's just been little snippets, and I would love to be on the stage again. No, I've done puppet work, and I've done choral reading, and I've done poetry with my kids, but I've not fulfilled what I'd like to inside of me.
My name's Trudy Hinke, and I live in Minneapolis. I'm the mother of two young children. So I just feel they're 4 and 6 now. And I love being a mother, but I've had, as probably all mothers of young children have, some frustrating times when I felt that I don't have any time alone, any time to be myself, or any time to explore things that I would like to do personally. But as an at-home mother, I feel that I'm doing an important job, and don't really want to be doing anything else right now except that. I have a wonderful group of women friends who have been very supportive through this time of my life. Some of the things that I think of as creative passions of mine would be traveling and meeting people in other countries. I love gardening and have been able to continue that. Something that I've become involved in is community-supported agriculture. There's a farm that we're members of that's an hour from our home. So it's somewhere that I'm able to take the children, and where it's the kind of environment where they can be free and I can be free too, and I can work in the garden. And so that's also helped me, because I'm a country person at heart, living in the middle of a city. So given me more of a feeling of connection with the land. I've lived here for 15 years, and I'm still very, when I talk of the country, very homesick for Australia.
Part of the vision for the future for you would be to get back to Australia? Is that a possibility?
I hope so. I grew up in the country, and it's wonderful being somewhere like this.
My name's Carol, and I did not grow up in the country, but I live there now. And so in my adult years, I have found out what a wonderful gift that is. I grew up in cities and suburbs, but have lived in the country for 20 years, and it has now become part of my soul. I don't know how to answer the question about creativity, but if it's worded the first way, what aspects of your life do you love, then I can answer it. I love to sing, and it is a great joy. I love to listen to music that is either instrumental or vocal. That's a great joy. I didn't used to be able to say that I like writing, because up until the time I got a computer, writing was painstaking. With, you know, it didn't matter whether I used pen or pencil. There were still dozens of crossouts and erasures and arrows around, and I changed my mind, and I wrote as fast as I could think, and then I couldn't read what I wrote. But writing was... I liked the finished product, but it was so torturous to try to get the finished product that writing wasn't much fun. Well, since I got a computer, writing is now once again fun, because that new technology has enabled my own thinking style, which is sort of jump around, to still come out to be coherent at the end, and I love to write. I love to hug children, and it doesn't matter if they are, you know, 2 weeks old or 18. I just absolutely love hugging children. It's probably God's joke on me that I ended up with two sons who like to hug, and one who would hug all day long, 24 hours a day, if he could. And one who hugs and then goes and does other things and then comes back for more hugs and then explores the world again. I love to read. That is a great joy. And I like to be alone. As much of a people person as I am, as much of an extrovert as I am, the time to have solitude and the time to just sit someplace and think, or lie down on my bed and look at the ceiling and ponder, I love that time as well.
Hi, I'm Marion Carpenter in Davis. I don't know what the questions were. I was trying to get this friend out that was having a problem to be with us. But anyway,
what moves you? What are your creative passions?
I'm a frustrated writer. But I talked to a publisher once. But I know I journal. And I said, when I know the end is near, I'm going to burn my journal. And he said, no, let me buy it. I said, well, because that is, if I didn't journal, I don't think I'd make it through life. It's just a part of me. I was married for almost 48 years to a man that the last 6 years I nursed. He needed a heart transplant. And when you live with dying every day, life becomes very precious. And then after that, I came to hold it. He died in October, and I came here. And let me tell you, at that time, it was what I needed. It was the love support. I worked very hard in the laundry. By the way, keep your kids off, towels off those streets. But anyway, and so I then went back, and I married a man that was my wife's best friend. I mean, I was his wife's best friend, and we were all friends together. And so I'm starting a new era. But, however, there was lots of struggles with that, because I was 65 when I got married. It's a little old, and he was 66. And his children, although they knew me very well, did not accept me. And so I struggled with that. But my creativity, we listen to music and we dance. And... in fact, our first date was, we went to a dance, and he hadn't danced for 20 years, and I hadn't danced for 10, except to hold him. And we got up to dance, and the gal said, well, you've been dancing for years, because we're both that gray haired. I said, no, this is our first date. So it was kind of a... And so we became, there was one band that we followed, and when we walked in the room, he'd play our theme song, which was, May I Have This Dance for the Rest of My Life. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so we danced through life. My husband has not retired yet. September is the time, but
He's way past the age. I said he has to do it before he's 70, so he's going to try. And my creativity, I used to be a wife, a grandmother, and a great-grandmother, and I really didn't know who I was, but I think I'm finally finding out who I am. A little late, but I'm a very... In fact, this is a good example of not losing your spontaneity. I went ice skating the year I came back out of Holden. I went ice skating 1 year, 2 years ago, and broke my arm and really suffered from that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, I'd like to tell people I was taking out the garbage. Enough of that.
I'm Bernie, and I'm right now from Olympia, Washington. And I guess my passion in life has been pretty much working for social justice and dealing with human needs out of a spiritual, religious perspective. I value deeply the seeking out who I am through contemplation. Why than what both of you said there. And I'm always finding out a little bit more about who I am, wanting to find out who I really am. And I reflect a lot on writings of Thomas Merton and people like that, just to make introspection. But Holden Village is a symbol for me. I really love Holden. It's a mix of reflection, liturgical expression, poetry, the mountains, and the concern for the world. So my passion is mixing all those things together. I feel at this point in my life it's more getting into... On one hand, I want to be more concrete and individual. On the other hand, I want to impact that world. You know, and most of my adult life has been fighting for the causes and dealing with things. Right now I work for Lutheran Social Services, but my background is a Catholic church and Catholic priesthood and activism through that outlet. So it's multifaceted. This past winter I enjoyed redoing our house. I did the kitchen and everything else around it, but I put in a floor, tile floor, which I never did anything like that before. You know, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of a thing to get something out of me and go on to the things. I have three children, and they're fantastic. They're a passion of my life. And they're in their teens now, one's 20 and married. And so they're about ready to become free and adults. I find that extremely exciting. But most of my time has been, well, this is beautiful. I go up there. So it's a fascinating question you raise. Who we are, who I am, and what we do with things.
And defining that by what our passions are, I think, is really key. Because so often, who you are is what occupation you have.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of different things that may not be anything to do with what your passions are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, this is such a wonderfully articulate group. I'm going to let you all do more talking. I'm learning more by just sitting and listening. But there are a few things I want to share with you from the book. Because what I hear from so many of you, I think I've heard it very poignantly from you, and that you had some passions and dreams, but those weren't acceptable. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at other things. I want to talk about that just for a minute, because there were some really good things in this book, ways of looking at culture, how the split occurred, which is really not from ourselves so much as what's been imposed on us. We've been told that we have to make a choice between our creative passions and our families. And it's a message we're so often given again and again and again, that for women it's not acceptable to do both, to follow our passion, because everything, our families and relationships, must always be put first. And so our own passions continually are put down and put back. And this goes back a long way. And there was some few quotes to read from this book. And a lot of it has to do with assumptions about women and creativity, which is that we aren't. No, we're not creative. There's a little something on that here. This gets more into the part of it. Women have always created and been present in the production of culture, but never in a starring or even obvious role. As the title of Germaine Greer's book, The Obstacle Race, I'd like to see this book, suggests, the path of the creative woman has been fraught with difficulties not faced by men. Even as women reclaim the capacity to make their art visible in the world, the male narrative often co-opts it. Female creative productions are often referred to disparagingly as women's art. Men presume the power to comment on, criticize, and ascribe meaning to women's art. Women's creations are relegated to a separate but unequal sphere. The importance of what they produce is trivialized. There is folk art, and then there is fine art. One woman artist told me at a conference at one point, she said, men do as art, what women do as crafts. There is art that is public, and there is art that is private and domestic. Quilting, crafting, needlework, the private domestic arts are rarely valued for the quality of the artistic and creative energy that goes into producing them. As Greer says, women have always excelled in the production of the nearly beautiful, remarkable, for finesse, delicacy, elegance, small work taking up little space, much time in its making, and no duration in its observation. And I think you see this among the
What was
writers.
That last part? Much time in its making and no duration in its...
In its observation.
Sounds like cooking.
I've never made a cook. I love to cook. I don't cook anymore.
It takes seven times as long to fix something as it does to eat it.
Certainly, they had more to say, too, about women who write and how so often the women that succeeded either had, in this late 1800s or the 1900s, either had were single women, or if they had children, the children were relegated, were wealthy enough that they could be put off to the governess or whatever. That was very exceptional for a woman with children to be.
Where does Danielle Steele fit into that with all her children? You know how many children she has? It's a great number, like 12, 13.
Oh, yeah.
And she writes
a book,
What, a Woman?
Oh, yeah.
She has, huh?
I think she's an exception that proves the rule.
That's right. And I can't recall what other famous writer who never started writing until all the children were in bed, 10 or 11 at night, and she'd write until 3
or 4
in the morning.
She takes care of her own children. She sleeps like 4 hours.
I think that's how you do it.
I suppose so.
You just don't. And I've not been one of those.
Her writing just glows. It's just good, isn't it?
I like her writing.
Well, there are a few other quotes in here that talked about that split.
What about validity of women about motherhood? I mean,
yeah.
We don't by ourselves create a child, but we certainly carry it for 9 months and give birth to it. And has that been valued since the Madonna and the art that she inspired?
We have a lot of questions about that. Or seeing, and it's funny because that has come and gone within the culture. There are periods of time when it's elevated almost to a sacrament.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other periods of time, which we are really actually just moving out of, in which any of us who may have chosen to put aside other work, and most of it was not all that creative, but even the creative work or the less creative work, and concentrate on family and homes were put down as somehow not being really liberated. There have been a lot of real mixed emotions, and I think I'm probably fairly typical in having lived through a lot of that era. A lot of very confused feelings about whether to start a family, when, and how to do that, and will my life then be lost? If I choose to go into parenting, do I have to then give up my art?
Well, years ago when I had my children, there was no choice. We didn't have the birth control pills. We didn't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
A child came along. In fact, I would not have chose to have a child 14 years after I had my last child, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Johnny come lately girl.
Mm-hmm.
There were 20 years between my oldest daughter is 52, mm-hmm. my youngest is 32, she's here now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three boys sandwiched in between.
Mm-hmm.
And motherhood was just something that
I was an illegitimate child myself, and so motherhood meant I did the very best I could at a very early age. Mm-hmm. And I had my first child when I was 16. And that I was a child myself, yet I wasn't, because I had grown up with a lot of background where I was old, mm-hmm. old in body and old in mind. Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, the reason I got married was to escape a bad foster home. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, everybody's helping these types of situations. And but I think maybe we have too much help. I want to say that the people that really struggle through life and struggle with the families and struggle with these problems are the ones that I see come out beautifully. I mean, it looks like the pits when they first have the children, and maybe they have all kinds of problems. But if they can, you know, I always like the quote, you know, according to the Bible, but, you know, builds character. And it does. You see these people emerge 15 years later, and they've got character.
Because you see in the same family some who come out with character and some who come out with destroyed.
Yeah, it's
you
know. It's not, you know, not unusual.
Yeah.
We don't have any choices about that, I think. We have choices to continue to, you know, accept. I think the word is there is accept. We accept where we are.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure there are abusive situations we want to get out of, but most common things. You know, so we don't have choices. So the children are pushed upon us, and I just kind of grew up with my kids. Mm-hmm. I did the best I could, and hey, they're okay. Half of them are divorced, but it's my heart to say, but that's okay. I'm no longer responsible for their lives.
You have to reach that point.
Mm-hmm. Right? I can say, hey.
I think when we were talking about, again, the split between really love, you know, our priorities of love and relationship, and then the artistic impulses, the creative impulses we also have, and the split that we have felt that we couldn't somehow integrate those things. A little bit about that. Love for women, as it is defined by the split image, is responsive love, passive love. In other words, when the cultural kind of conditioning that says you can't integrate these things, you're either one or the other. The kind of love they're talking about is a very passive love. And what this book is saying, what some artists they're quoting are saying, in other words, it's love that mirrors and reflects, smiles and responds, that kind of love. And saying our definition of love as we understand it rarely reflects the aspect of love, active expression of self, love that brings forth. Our training has been to think little of these creative aspects of love, the discovering, the committing, the doing aspects. In his 1991 book on creative process, Creating, author Robert Fritz begins with a bold statement that love is what creating is about. Fritz makes a distinction between receptive and or passive love, the kind usually associated with female experience, and love that is more active. In the first, he says, a situation happens and one feels love. In the second, the love comes first and creates the situation. What he suggests is that the energy of love doesn't emerge only in response to someone or something else. It's a force that moves from within us. In the creative process, love is generative rather than simply responsive. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Another little bit about that. This dichotomizing of two aspects of female energy, caretaking versus generative action, has been the dominant impact of the cultural narrative about love. We have thought of ourselves either as lover or artist, but rarely both. Rarely do we assume that the same process involved in creating must inform our loving, or that in loving we create. Rarely would we assume that agency to create, because to have agency means the quality of moving or exerting power, the state of being in action. And as women, this has not been our common sense of ourselves. The point is, we've been fed a line about love, and the forms of our lives are often constricted as they are enhanced by it. Journalist Bill Moyers recently did a PBS documentary on women's creativity. Did any of you happen to have seen that? I didn't either. I'm lucky to find it. Better than libraries might have. In it, women artists and writers speak of the conflicting pulls of love and creativity, especially the impact of bearing children. Author Mary Gordon, mother of one daughter at the time of the interview, says, you just feel this passion for babies.
But she also says that being with her daughter just stops the creative process. The documentary underscores the point that women have learned to resolve the split they experience between love and creativity by making an art of intimacy. The piece is really a commentary on the split, what Gordon calls the half-life that women are expected to live. Any comments about that?
Well, unless a woman consumes her whole life into this child, I think that her creativity goes on. I think, but some women, when they have children, do that. Then their husband goes out the window, everybody else goes out the window, their friends, they just totally wrap themselves up in this child.
I think that for my generation, the generation that I'm looking at now, parenting is an epic. I mean, it's a part of your life, but it's not the beginning and the ending. It's a section of your life. Mm-hmm. And you have... And then as the children change and go from being very dependent to being somewhat independent, there's another little epic of parenting. There are two epics of parenting. And within those epics, there's a lot of creativity going on. Maybe the passion for your particular creative energy is not able to be maximized. And the negative I feel is that I have, and I don't mean this really negatively, but lost time. When I compare myself with my husband, who is in public speaking and with the public as a minister, I feel like I'm behind, you know, and he has so much more expertise than I do, but it's because he hasn't had to do the dishes and the wash and the floors. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I feel angry about that, but it's just a fact of life. I chose to be home with my children, and I'm happy for that. I'm happy the way I see my children facing life now. Mm-hmm. So in that creative aspect of being a parent and a mother, I'm pleased with that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's too negative for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. In this book, they kind of give a whole spectrum. They give the spectrum of people who choose to be lovers and who subjugate themselves completely into this process of relationship, into children, you know, relationships to spouses, to lovers, to children, whatever. Okay, clear over here. Clear on the other end of the spectrum, they have artists, people who think it is simply not possible that in order to have pursued their art, that they have had to cut out relationships, not only families, but just relationships in general, in order to be purely artists. And what they're seeming to say, and I haven't gotten through the book yet, what they're seeming to say is that the people who seem to be living the most integrated lives are people more in here who have been practicing integrating those two aspects, that they don't really ignore either end of the spectrum, but are finding ways to bring them together. And so let's spend a few minutes with each of us. And actually, we could write, but this is such an articulate group, I think it would be fine just to say it. Let's talk about, first of all, I called this workshop Breaking the Silence, because silence, to me, is a big theme of women's lives. We have sat around with a group of friends, and we talk about some of the frustrations in our lives. A real common thing that seems to come up is feeling silenced. Feeling silenced on our jobs, feeling silenced like you really can't, really don't dare speak out, or sometimes you think of just the right thing to say, but it's 2 hours later. Now, that we somehow feel in our relationships with our partners, often we feel like we just aren't being heard. You know, we may even be speaking it, but we're not feeling like we're really being heard. We feel silenced. And so in terms of coming in touch with this creative aspect of ourselves or with our own dreams and our strong desires, that maybe there's some part in you that feels like you are not being heard, that you feel you are being blocked, you're feeling you are being silenced. So what I thought might be a good exercise is to think about those things that blocks you. And let's just take a minute to do that. And then the other side of it, what are the things that you have found that have broken through that silence? How have you found ways? Some of you have spoken already very articulately about the fact that you are integrate in your lives. You seem to have broken through a lot of those silences that culturally have been imposed on you. Your relationships may have imposed on you, your background, who knows. And a lot of you, clearly have been moving through that. But I'm interested in this group talking about writing first for a few minutes, if you choose to do it that way. We'll just take about 3 minutes. Write about what some of the blocks are to you reaching your creative passion, and then how ways that you have found to break through some of the blocks that have stopped you perhaps in the past, or ways that you could do that. Okay, let's just take, we've only got 15 minutes left, so we'll take about 3 to 5 minutes to write. Somewhat brief, just to get around the circle. I really want to hear what you have to say. I find that the blocks for me of having more the kind of integrated life I'd like to have, but particularly the block my creative pursuits have been a fear of offending, of somehow rocking the family boat to kind of claim more time for myself, might upset my partner, might upset my children's needs. In other words, to put myself more in the front means to put some of the family's needs back, and that's very threatening. It's very frightening to do that. Fear of losing love. Economically, for me to pursue what I do, there's economic risk involved. That's social security, financial kind of issues. And some of the things that have helped me break through, scheduling. I guess this week at Holden was a classic example, because I came here scared to death that I would have no time to myself, and sat down with the family and said, here's mom's time, this is mine. And really having the family understand and go along with that, so that we really did spread out the time so that everybody felt that they had their empty spaces and their free time, but also that they were part of the process. Because we have a 13-year-old, a 16-year-old, and a 2-year-old, so everybody had to be participating in the care of the small one. And learning that my passion, my art, feeds the soul of the family, what we all do together, and that I am not a good mother when I am not allowed to do the work I need to do. You know, when I feel like I'm continually putting my time and my work aside, I am not fun to live with. And I think that the family has kind of learned that. And so... And also, it took a divorce and a remarriage before I found a partner who also respected my work as equally important and equally contributing, though perhaps not financially, and was able to support my dream on a deep emotional level. And that took a long time to get to that place, to find that partnership.
Linda, I had a lot of the same feelings, and because of the gulf that I felt, I had a divorce as well, but never remarried. And I put down that I still don't feel that I communicate effectively with men, especially about feelings. I have one son, and we're very simpatico, but another son, the day he was born, I don't think we connected. And I still, he turns his cheek and kind of winces when I want to kiss him on the cheek and give him a hug. And my best friends are women. And we all just, my Bible study group, and we all feel very, just understand what each other is going through. I feel, and I see that it started back. I wrote something about my father and my grandfather. How my father dismissed, I can remember once I said, I want to go to Duke Law School and then join the Foreign Service. And I don't think he even made a remark. I think it was so out of his realm of anything for his daughter that was going to grow up to be a nice lady, go to college and get married, and never work again, never work outside the home. So I still feel that gulf. I wonder, how do men feel about being fathers? do they feel the same, you know, unconditional love? Do their children mean the same thing to them that they mean to me and a lot of other women? I don't know how men feel about lots of things. I think the most appealing thing to me about a man would be that he'd care enough about something to cry. You know, when I saw Norman Schwarzkopf or Bill Clinton in tears, I thought, you know, I really, really respected them for it. But even my pastor, whom I really love, he's wonderful as far as his sermon and research, and he's very astute, but he can't even speak about sexual revolution in the Lutheran Church. He can't speak about lots of women's issues. He's kind of... I feel sorry for him and my husband. There's that gulf. I'll probably die and the gulf will still be there. Only Jesus
understands. Look out. There's somebody out there for it.
Someone has been recommending to me this book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
I haven't read it yet.
I think it speaks to that goal.
That's really, how I feel.
Really well. Yeah.
There are several books out there. There's a He Said, She Said.
Which one?
I think it's He Said, or no.
He Said, She Said.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a couple of different ones.
Well, I think I came up with a lot of stuff, almost an overwhelming amount of stuff that makes me go, whoa. One, I think I grew up in a very homogenous community in rural Minnesota, an entirely Roman Catholic area, entirely where the town and the parish were equal, the same exact thing. And in some ways, there wasn't a lot of leeway to be different or to individuate from any of that. In my family, too, I mean, it had definitely its issues in that area, but also in the town in general. And so I kind of grew up with like a this is right and this is wrong absolutist rather than relativist, like whole understanding of life, that differing perspectives weren't ever presented, that there was a right way and a wrong way. So that in itself, I think, has been a... I can remember from, like, day one in school when the teacher said, draw a red apple, I could do it. But if the teacher said, draw a picture, I wanted more directions because I couldn't just create anything. You know, I wanted to make sure I wasn't going to draw the wrong thing.
And you might be wrong.
Right. Right. And that... like carried through in many ways. There have definitely been people in my life that have influenced me in the opposite, more creative way. But I think that kind of is something I constantly struggle with, and that's a very regular block in my life. And then there are also the ways that relationships between men and women have been modeled to me, and that for me to like figure out who I am and what I want as a person has not been identified as important as the men around. And not even necessarily that they really figured out who they were as people, but that they made the decisions, and so they had more power in that aspect. So I have to remind myself that I am a better person to be with and more capable of being in relationships effectively and being more fun and all of those things when I focus on myself first and not on everyone else. So there are a lot of different blocks for me. That pretty much covers everything. I also think, just one other point, that the world is so complex that, and there are so many different facets to our life that we make clear definitions and things to simplify it, or it would be so overwhelming to us. And that a lot of the reading I've done on simple lifestyle and cutting out some of that complexity can make like just everyday living not so complex, so you can be more creative and you don't have to define it so simply, because you're not worried about a million different things constantly. And when I come to someplace like Holden, that's like right there, you know, because you can just, there's a lot more space and time and energy and mind power to be creative.
Oh, that really resonates with me. I'm working on those issues, but I absolutely see how much of my creativity is pulled away and used up sorting and figuring out what to do and maintaining and buying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's really true. That's a good thing. Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice to be away from the newspapers, and not the news. It's the grocery ads and the back to school clothes.
And I don't know how many that men really do get pulled into that. I mean, you can speak to that, Bernie, if you want anywhere, jump in. But how much
you represent all of manhood?
No,
right.
That's right.
That's
right.
That's right.
Just like you do, yeah.
No, probably, won't you press?